So today's Sutta class, we start out with the Chula Dhamma Samadana Sutta, Majjhima 45. The particular discourse has one parallel in the Majjhima Agama and has the same title, Dhamma Samadana Sutta without Chula. Majjhima Agama, number 174. And also the next sutta, the Mahadhamma Samadana Sutta, also has similarities. So the title, of course, and key word here is samadana, to undertake something. And this is from the same root as upadana. So you know, upadana is grasping. Okay, so the word adana is to take something. Okay, so we translate upadana as to grasp something in the negative sense, being attached to it and so on. Samadana is used in a positive sense, so similar kind of idea, but in a positive sense, and Bhikkhu Bodhi is translated quite well as undertaking things. Okay, so we undertake precepts or ways of practice and so on and so forth. And so it means we hold on to them, we have a degree of commitment to them. And the sam as a prefix often, although it's not by no means universal, but often some as a prefix has a kind of positive connotation. So, you know, it appears in words like sambuddha and samma samadhi and things like that, even though these might be technically different forms. But there's this kind of feel in Pali, that prefix sam often has a kind of a positive feel. So by putting samadana there, it doesn't actually change the meaning of it particularly much. There's no particular difference in the literal meaning between upadana and samadana, but sam just sort of maybe gives it more of a positive spin. Okay, and so these are, of course, the dhammas that we're undertaking, and Bhikkhu Bodhi's translated dhammas as things. Is that what dhammas means? Things? The thing is well expounded by the Blessed One?
Stuff.
I bow my head to the thing. Is that right?
A true dhamma.
The true dhamma.
Dhamma can be many things.
Though. Dhamma can be many things. Yeah. I bow my head to the stuff. Perhaps principles in this case. Undertaking principles. So there are these four ways of undertaking things, or undertaking principles. Perhaps. So there's a way of undertaking things that is pleasant now and ripens in the future as pain. There's a way of undertaking things that is painful now and that ripens in the future as pain. There is a way of undertaking things that is painful now and ripens in the future as pleasure. And there is a way of undertaking things that is pleasant now and ripens in the future as pleasure. Now, do you think that, does that strike you as being the most obvious way of putting things or arranging it? No. Why not?
That sounds complicated.
Sounds complicated.
Should it have all its four recitations?
Well, yeah, normally it starts out, goes from the negative to the positive, doesn't it? So normally it would start out with painful now and painful later, and then sort of pain maybe, and then the middle two might go either way, and then the last one, but it seems to me. Actually, the different versions of this thing have different sequences. This version, the Mahasamadana Sutta, the next sutta is different. And the Sangiti Sutta, again, in the Digha Nikaya is different, which is kind of weird. It's very unusual in the Pali text that you have different sequences for the same set of dhammas. On the other hand, the various Chinese and Sarvasivadin versions of it, in the Chula Dhamma Samadana Sutta, the Mahadhamma Samadana Sutta, and also the Sangiti Pariyaya, they also have all the same sequence. So the Sarvasivadin is consistent in this case, and the Pali is not. So we should probably say tut tut to the editors in the Mahavihara. They were probably having a bad day. They probably edited this one on a Friday or something like that. They had to sort of get ready for a big ceremony or something, and they had to sort of finish it off quickly. And that's just a speculation. Right. What is the way of undertaking things that is pleasant now and ripens in the future as pain? Okay? So this one is probably fairly common. There are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this. There is no harm in sensual pleasures. They take to gulping down. Wow. Moliya badhahi. Is that right? No, sorry. They take to gulping down sensual pleasures. Kamesu patabhyatang. Must be the word Bhikkhu Bodhi is translating as gulping down. I'm not familiar with it. So So anyway, certain Samana Brahmanas, evang vadino, have such a view and such a doctrine and such a view. So we should do our little bit of grammar here. So let's what should we do? Let's do a verbal form. Let's do something exciting like a future tense. Okay? Okay, so let's see if we've got, maybe we'll find past and future tenses just to keep you really stimulated. So as we go through, we'll notice the past, present and future tenses of the verbs as we go through. Okay, so this one, apajade, it's present tense. Yeah, it's just that there's probably not going to be many future ones. Most of them will be in the present tense anyway. Dekho moriya badhahi paribajikahi paricharenti. Okay, so paricharenti, the present tense verb. Paribajikahi, so this is the, paribajika is the wanderers, yeah. And this is a feminine form, feminine plural instrumental form. With female wanderers, with a molia badha. Moli badha, moli is the top knot. So you do a top knot on the top of your head. So Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as, they divert themselves with women wanderers who wear their head bound in a top knot. Sounds a bit curious, doesn't it? I'm not aware that these molia badha paribhajikas are known elsewhere. Perhaps only in this one particular sutta. Who were these wanderers? What were they doing?
Binding up their
hair.
Even now the lisan, they put
The hair.
Yeah. And never cut hair.
They never cut it?
Very high.
Yeah, yeah. And is that for like some monks or something? Who does that?
Another kind of monk.
Not Buddhist monks.
Similar with Buddhism,
yeah.
But different.
Different, yeah.
Taoism.
Yeah, well, it may be related to the thing. So we noticed that those pictures in Thailand of King Mongkut's children, and they all had their hair bound up in a little top knot thing. So this is what it says. I don't know. I'm just reading the sutta. Okay. They say this. What future fear do good recluses and Brahmins see in sensual pleasures when they speak of abandoning sensual pleasures and describe the full understanding of sensual pleasures? Pleasant is the touch of this woman wanderer's tender, soft, downy arm. Thus they take to gulping down. Okay, so here's the sukho imisa paribad sukho. Happy or pleasant, imisa paribajikaya. Tarunaya is, it's just a mistake. These things are really full of mistakes. So this taruna means literally like young or tender. Mudukaya, gentle, tender. Lomasaya. Downy arm, she translated as downy. Yeah.
Hairy arms.
Well, it's just all some paso, yeah. And their touch of them, okay? What was this? De ampaso de ka. This is just spelling mistakes. Quite a few spelling mistakes in this thing. Right, they take to gulping down sensual pleasures, and having done so, on the dissolution of the body after death, they reappear in a state of deprivation in an unhappy destination in perdition, even in hell. There they feel painful, racking, piercing feelings. Then they say thus, this is that future fear that those good recluses and Brahmins saw in sensual pleasures when they spoke of abandoning sensual pleasures and described the full understanding of sensual pleasures. Okay, for it's by reason of these sensual pleasures that we are now feeling these painful, racking, piercing feelings. So, of course, the point here being that people who've undertaken the holy life and living, presenting to the world the face of celibate monastics, making their livelihood in that way, gaining respect and so on from people for their way of life, and then that's of course very deceitful to be presenting that face to the world and then indulging oneself with the women wanderers with their hair tied up in top knots. And then the very, very memorable simile of the Maluva creeper. Because suppose that in the last month of the hot season, a Maluva creeper pod burst open and a Maluva creeper seed fell at the foot of a sala tree. Then a deva living in that tree became fearful, perturbed, and frightened. Okay. A devata. Okay. But the devas, friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, the garden devas, park devas, tree devas, and devas inhabiting medicinal herbs, grass, and forest monarch trees. So there you go. It's quite an unusual list of different kinds of devas here. This is Arama Devata, Vana Devata, the forest or woodland devas, the Rukha Devata, the tree devas, and the Osadhi Tena Vana Patisu. Osadhi meaning the Osadhi is a word for medicinal herbs. Tena is the grass, Vana is the wood, Vana Patisu, not sure what the end of that word means. Okay, so then they would say this. Do not. Have no fear, sir. Have no fear. Okay. Now, this particular form here, ma bhavang bhayi, this form here we've mentioned a couple of times, this is a what they call the aorist form of a verb. And aorist is possibly the most complex, formally complex of all the verbs in Pali. There's about four quite different sets. Not only do you have all the different endings for all the different cases and so on, but you have about four different sets of completely different endings for the aorist, which might all apply for the same verb in different contexts. So, but aorist normally means past tense, okay? But when it's used with ma, it doesn't mean past tense, it means do not, okay? Got nothing to do with past tense, so this is a little bit confusing. Ma bhavang bhayi, do not fear. Okay, bhaya is fear. So ma bhavang bhayi, do not fear. Okay, and while we're on the subject of verbs, I can't resist it. I was trying to restrain myself, but I can't resist it now. I'm having to reveal the secret of the optative verb, because actually most of the verbs that we've got here are actually optative verbs. Such as apajaya. So this ending, we have the eya ending, is a third person singular optative ending, and nipateya, paleya, and so on, daheya, gileya. And so that means something like, this would happen, okay? So it's always used, say, in hypothetical cases, so it's always used in the vinaya, you know, should any bhikkhu do this? Okay, and it's always the optative case, should this thing happen? And so this is all a hypothetical story that's being told here. It's always given in the optative case.
Is that operative or oblative?
Optative, as in optional. Something that's neither sure that it's not sure that it's going to happen. Yeah, it's a very common case, optative. Okay? Now, have no fear. Where are we now? Have no fear. Have no fear. Okay. Perhaps apevanama. Okay. Apevanama. Perhaps it might happen. A peacock will swallow the Malava creeper seed. Okay. Malava bijang moro wa gileya. So it's the optative case. Perhaps it would happen that the moro, the peacock, would eat it, or the mago, the deer. Is it a deer, a mago, or what is it, a wild beast anyway? Any kind of wild beast. Wa kadeya would eat it. Or forest fire will burn it. Davadaho wa daheya. Or the forest fire would burn it. So he's often translated as wood. Or the woodsman carried it off. Or white ants will devour it. Upachika wa utaheyung. Okay, or it may not even be fertile, abijang va panasati, or perhaps it's not even really a seed, it's abijang, okay? But no peacock swallowed that seed. Okay, so where do we go here? Sasa, neva moro gileya, so it was not the case, never, that not the case that the peacock should eat it and so on and so forth. No peacock swallowed it, no wild animal ate it, no forest fire burned it, no woodsman carried it off, no white ants devoured it, and it was in fact fertile. Okay? Then it would be in due course, It was moistened by rain from a rain-bearing cloud. The seed in due course sprouted, and the Malava creeper's tender, soft, downy tendril wound itself around that sala tree. Okay, so here's the tender, soft, downy tendril. Taruna mudaka lomasa vilambani. Okay. Then the deva living in that sala tree thought, what future fear did my friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, see in that Malava creeper seed when they gathered together and reassured me? Pleasant is the touch of this Malava creeper's tender, soft, downy tendril. Then the creeper enfolded the sala tree, made a canopy over it, draped a curtain all around it, and split the main branches of the tree. The deva who lived in the tree then realized this is the future tree that they saw in that Malava creeper seed. Because of that Malava creeper seed, I'm now feeling painful, racking, piercing feelings. Okay. And so in the same way with the Samanas and Brahmins. So this is the first one. Pleasant now and painful in the future. Of course, this is just an example. There's many other ways that you can do things that are pleasant now and painful in the future. Such as?
Eating cake.
Yes.
Eating meat, perhaps?
Eating meat? Why is that painful in the future? Why is that pleasant in the present, anyway?
Depends on perception. But painful for the whole world in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken that hasn't been cooked thoroughly. Tastes good now. 6 hours later, you're on the toilet contemplating a different type of dharma, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, driving a car?
Flying car, flying car. In a much broader sense than the global warming.
Ah, yeah, it's fun now.
Fun now?
Yeah.
And our previous generation had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
That's painful now.
Yeah.
Having a gin and tonic's nice.
Having a gin and tonic. My grandmother used to like drinking gin and tonic. She lived till she was 94.
That proves something.
Yeah. Right, so we can do things now. It can apply in generations too, can't it? Just like my mum and my stepdad who came here, and we were talking about global warming and things, and then they said, oh, well, we'll be well gone before these things happen. I was like, oh, thank you very much. Yes, yes, you just come along and stuff the world up for us, and we'll just deal with it then, shall we? Okay. So you get revenge.
When you get reborn, you've got to probably do the steps.
Yeah.
Gambling is another one, my time.
Gambling?
Yeah. The monks in Myanmar, when they ordain,
Yeah. Power
to make them promise not to gamble
uh-huh.
or drink after them.
Uh-huh.
Their ordination.
Well, that's good.
You do that to the Western monks. Just a little Burmese.
Well, I think that's good that they do that. Why is gambling pleasant?
Oh, it's that thrill, you know, of wasting your money.
Well, I don't think you think of wasting your money, you think of actually winning.
Yes. The delusion.
That's what it's chosen.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's thrill, isn't it?
Not so exciting when you walk out when you're down $200.
It's the risk involved, I think. People are addicted to the risk.
I think people are addicted to the actual chance that they might make some easy money.
Yeah.
Are monks and nuns allowed to gamble?
Yeah.
Small amounts. One time it happened, Ayakama was travelling around England, and they stopped for lunch at this English pub, and they were just in the restaurant at the pub, and then one of the had to go to the toilet, they had to go past the row of poker machines, and one of the people they were driving with, just so they had a spare pound or something like that, so they put it in the poker machine. And just then Ayakama walked past and they said, oh, Aya, please, you know, it would make this really suspicious, why don't you pull the lever? And so she said, all right, so she pulled the lever, and then they all went, ding, 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 jackpot, and all the money started pouring out of the machine. And so as soon as they did that, the guy behind the bar started ringing the bell in the bar. It's like, okay, you have to shout around for everyone. So this was the tradition in the pub, in the jackrock. You have to shout around for everybody in the pub. So.
Well, how did she do with it?
No, they shouted around for everyone in the pub.
Shouted them orange juice.
Didn't have any choice. It would have been war otherwise.
There's nothing in the media about gambling. Well, apart from trade. You have to have fair trade, I suppose, between bhikkhus. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not with laymen.
Yeah. Mm.
So bhikkhus could probably gamble with each other if they wanted to.
Mm.
Or it's horsemen.
Although if it's considered a game of some sort, then it wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, it is kind of curious that it's not... it's gambling's mentioned.
Yeah,
it's mentioned in... in various places in the suttas, but it's not a linear thing.
You often hear about monks betting on certain things, you know, whether somebody's a stream winner or not, or whether they leave the holy life for such and such a period of time. Or
I've heard of people betting on whether someone's going to disrobe, but I haven't heard of people betting on whether someone's a stream enter. It'd be difficult to verify.
So what's some other examples about it?
What? Something that's painful, pleasant now and painful later?
Getting married? And there's his kids, and then there's, mortgage, and then there's the dog, and picket fence that you...
I don't know, I don't have any experience. Right. Pleasant now, painful later. Okay, we got that. Next one. Painful now and painful in the future. Here, a bhikkhu, someone goes naked, rejecting conventions, licking his hands, not coming when asked, not stopping when asked, and so on and so forth. So these are all the different kinds of ascetic practices we've met before in previous suttas, and blah, 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 so many. And just to notice, I mentioned this before, but just we've been studying these rules in the Vinaya, so just to notice this again, but in the rules about the bhikkhuni ordination, it has a series of three rules. One is you shouldn't ordain a pregnant woman. Secondly, is you shouldn't ordain a woman who's breastfeeding. And the third one is you shouldn't ordain a woman who's gihigata. It's not exactly the next one, but gihigata. And gihigata is glossed in the commentary as purisantaragata. Okay? So these are exactly the same three terms as we find here. The gabhini, the pregnant woman, the payamana, who's breastfeeding. And the purisantaragata, gone among men, something. What exactly it means is not 100% clear. So, useful reference to them. And so on and so forth, all the different things that they do. He dwells pursuing the practice of bathing in water three times daily, including the evening, which is perhaps not the most ascetic practice one could imagine. Thus, in such a variety of ways, he dwells pursuing the practice of tormenting and mortifying the body. The dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in a state of deprivation in an unhappy destination, in perdition, even in hell. This is the way of undertaking things that is painful now and ripens in the future as pain. Okay. So, the Buddha was obviously not particularly impressed with these kinds of practices. Interestingly enough, the Chinese version in those practices not only mentions the ascetic practice of pulling out your hair and beard, okay, but also mentions the practice of shaving your hair and beard. So is this a practice that's going to lead one to hell? Perhaps a mistake in the Chinese translation. Okay, so what's painful now and painful in the future? And so remembering that one of the things that's painful about those things is some of the things are more or less, whatever, useful or extreme or whatever, but the main problem there is that what's underlying them is the view which says that by deliberately tormenting and torturing my body, therefore I'm going to find freedom or liberation or power or whatever it is that they're looking for. So because of that wrong view motivates the action. So what else is painful now and painful later?
Forcing yourself to sit for 3 hours of meditation.
Forcing yourself to sit for 3 hours of meditation. Is that painful now and painful later?
Yes.
Why is it painful now?
Because your hips and your knees hurt now.
And why is it painful later?
Because they're stuffed up.
And you have to go to hospital. Fair enough, yeah.
And you have to sit on chairs.
Yeah. Painful now and painful later.
Life. Being born.
It's
pretty painful.
Yeah.
You come out yelling and screaming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, death.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be too pleasant. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, life. Yeah, painful now and painful later.
Craving.
Mm.
Craving for something that you can't have.
Craving for something you can't have is painful now and painful later.
Mm.
What about if you get it later?
You can't have.
Why not?
Let's say you want to have the moon. You can't have it now and you can't have it later. You can wish all you want.
Not if you're America.
They're buying up space now.
Yeah.
Out of space. So
yeah. Why not? Exactly.
Space
realistic.
Yeah.
Needs renovator. Renovator's delight. Yeah.
Needs atmosphere.
Okay. Painful now and painful later. Okay. Next. What about painful now and pleasant in the future? Right. Here, because... Where are we? Painful now? Pachupanna dukkhang. Pachupanna dukkhang. So it's pachupanna is the present. Ayating is the future. Sukhavipakang. Here, we met that last week. Idha. Bhikkhave ekacho. A certain person is normally... Pakatiya tibba raga jatiko. Okay? Tibba. Extremely. Okay? Extremely lustful. Extremely desirous. A lot of desire. And he constantly experiences pain and grief born of lust. By nature, he has strong hate. Okay? Pakatiya tibba. Tibba dosa jatiko. So the word jatika here at the end is from jati, to be born. But in this kind of context, it means has the nature of being. Okay, so tibba dosa jatika, it means his nature is to be always very full of anger. Okay, and so constantly experiences pain and grief born of hate and of delusion. Yet, so sahapi dukkhena sahapi domanasena, but so full of dukkha and full of domanasa. Weeping with a tearful face, asumukopi, rudamano. He leads a perfect and pure holy life. Paripurnang, parisudhang, brahmachariyang, charati. Present tense verb. And on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in a happy destination even in the heavenly world. This is called the way of undertaking things that is painful now and ripens in the future as pleasant. Okay, so gating sagang lokang upapaddati. So notice that the idea here is basically a kind of restraint. And so there's this kind of idea that there's this very, very important and very fundamental idea in our minds that somehow, it's one of the things that comes with growing up, is like realizing that somehow if we don't have everything right now, you know, this is an idea of like delaying or putting things off. And one of the very important contexts that this was developed in was the context of agriculture. Okay? And this is something that's so fundamental for us that we don't even think about it. But it's actually very bizarre, isn't it? Here you've got perfectly good food, you know, you've got grain, which you can eat, yeah? And in the past it wasn't like it is today, where we've got, you know, we want to eat something, we just go into the supermarket and there's so much food you can't even, you know, food is precious. It's hard to get, yeah. And in the wild, you know, there aren't so many food plants. There's only a few kinds of plants that you can even get reasonably decent food from. And the whole process of evolving grains and things that have got a lot of food that we can eat took many thousands of years before it's reached the state that it is today. So it's not easy to get food and food plants. And so somehow there's this kind of realization, oh, if we get this food and we don't eat it all now, but we'll keep some of it, yeah? And not only will we keep it, we'll actually throw it away. we'll actually take this grain, which we could eat right now, and have a really yummy meal of porridge, and we're going to, instead of that, we're going to throw it down on the ground. Yeah? So that takes an incredible leap in consciousness out of thinking of purely present gratification to actually putting something off to a hypothetical future. And so to be able to do that, you know, you have to be able to observe all the seasons. Yeah? And you have to have a good understanding, conceptual understanding of the seasons. Yeah? And to understand the seasons, you have to also have some kind of culture as well. Because like in one lifetime, seasons change from one year to the next. They're not always the same. So to be able to do that, you have to be able to predict with a reasonable degree of certainty that the seasons are going to behave in such a way. And to do that, you need to have a reasonable base of data to do it on. And most of us haven't seen that, yeah? And so this is why you need culture. And so culture tells us, through myths, right, that this is the way things always are. Yeah, they tell the myths of Demeter and Persephone. Yeah, and it was always, you know, the mother who comes out at a particular season and then reaps the fertility, and then she goes down to the underworld, and then for the winter months it's all drear and desolate and nothing grows, and then she comes up again. And so we're told through our culture and through the myths in our culture that this is a pattern in nature, and it keeps on happening again and again and again and again. It's always been like that, and it always will be like that. And so this teaches us to have the confidence that we can actually make this sacrifice. And so in a sense that throwing down of that grain is a sacrifice to the gods. Okay, it's giving up something that we have now. We're offering it to the gods by throwing it on the field, because of course the earth itself is a god or a goddess. And then the goddess, because she's bountiful, merciful, then the next year she gives us much more than we had the previous year. Yeah? And so this is how in human lives, in human consciousness, we learn to put off present gratification for the sake of future pleasure. And of course it's something that we all learn to do, not only in human culture on the big scale, but we all learn to do that as kids, don't we? We grow up, and when we're first kids, we've got to be now, want. It's got to have it now, and can't put off anything to the future. And this is one thing that we're gradually learning. So principles, the Dhamma Samadana is like an extension of this. Okay? So this particular one is very reassuring for some of us living the holy life. Weeping with tears running down our faces. Okay. And how? Pleasant now and pleasant in the future. Well, hang on, what else is painful now and pleasant in the future? Any other examples?
Washing the dishes.
Is that really?
Well, the monks and the nuns kept mindfully leaving dishes behind for others to clean up, to make mirror, of course.
Yeah.
And we are a field of mirror, so we can't dig the soil, and we can't plant seeds, so the only way we can be a field of mirror is to plant dishes and cups for others.
Uh-huh.
So whilst they may be gnashing their teeth and wailing and beating their breast, they're cleaning the dish later. Yeah. They look at the clean dishes and they reflect how nice, so we can use this cutlery again. So it's painful now, but in the future it's pleasant. And they may also in the back of their mind think, oh, we're going to develop some good merit here. And in a future life, I will never have to do dishes again or something like that.
Sounds good to me.
Renovating, okay?
Oh no, that's pleasant now and pleasant later.
Get the demo
story out. And the angle grinders.
Yeah. Sledgehammers.
Yeah.
But then when it all gets tidied up and made new and fresh.
And then you get to think of the next project.
I like to call it therapy.
Yeah. Well, some cases it's kind of gender based, you know.
Maybe like Eva's operation, painful now.
Painful. Is that right?
My operation was my operation.
Well, when you were ill.
In days gone by, when I was just a little bit ill.
She wasn't ill. She had a turn.
Just a little bit, requiring an ambulance to be called. Apart from that,
it was painful. then it wasn't painful because I was under anesthetic. And then it got more and more, not really painful, no, I wasn't painful. I didn't use the morphine or anything like that.
Yeah.
Now it's painful. And then it will be not painful. I think it's a bit of a muddle.
Yeah. Well, what about Burma?
It's painful now and painful later.
Painful now and perhaps pleasant in the future. Meditation's painful now and pleasant in the later. Oh, Peter. It's not that bad, is it?
Well.
Well, if you do the 3 hours,
that's true. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes you have to have that bit of determination to just keep going. Usually, when you look back at it, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was. Sometimes it is. Okay, and what is the way that is pleasant now and pleasant later? Here, someone by nature does not have strong lust, hatred, and delusion, and doesn't experience grief, pain and grief born of those things. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome dhammas. He gets into the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. On the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in a happy destination, even in the heavenly world. Okay? So this is a way of undertaking things that is pleasant, no? And pleasant in the future. So this, of course, is the best way. Of course, it's a bit slightly odd here that it has the teaching of jhanas merely for the sake of getting reborn in heaven. In the Chinese version, it says that you become a non-returner, third stage of enlightenment. So you get reborn in a pleasant realm in the future and get enlightened there. So that's perhaps at least a bit more Buddhist presentation. So, any more questions on that one before?